again. Good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It's a Wednesday, August the 29th, 2018. Last Wednesday in August, 15 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into the Now program, and I am Scott Spears along with you for the ride today. Now, we're going to have a lot of trivia questions coming up later on in the program, and a whole new batch of them. And I'm going to give you some of the answers to some of the questions that were not answered yesterday, but we've got tickets to give away for the big Labor Day weekend coming up this weekend. Who could believe it's Labor Day already? That is amazing. So get ready for that coming up in hour number two today. But hour number one, we're going to discuss something very important today, and that's the weather. It affects us here in Ohio, northwest Ohio, all the time because we have four seasons, and you don't know what it's going to be like one day to the next. So what can you consult to help you out? Well, it's a book, a magazine that comes out every year. The Old Farmer's Almanac 2019 edition is in my hands right now, and we are so glad to welcome to this program, as we do every year, the editor of the Old Farmer's Almanac, Janice Stillman. Janice, how are you?
I'm great, Scott. It's nice to be with you. Thank you.
Yes, always good to speak with you. 2019, how many years have you been the editor now?
I joined the company in the year 2000, so I'm rounding up. I just finished my 18th year, actually.
What has changed in the last 18 years?
Well, we've certainly gotten far more digital tools and opportunities for folks on the web. We've introduced just about all our publications into digital format for virtually any device you use. The website is, there's a term and it escapes me, but you can get it on your phone. We've introduced a monthly magazine, an e-book, an e-magazine called Extra, E-X-T-R-A with an exclamation, and that's available through almanac.com. So, the Old Farmer's Almanac in print, it has not changed much. I'm telling you, people beg us not to change it, basically, but we can introduce all kinds of new opportunities and tools and fun facts and information on the website, almanac.com. We've also introduced several cookbooks in the past 18 years or so, and those are available on the website and in some stores. Oh, and we continue with the Old Farmer's Almanac for Kids. We actually started that, we're making the 8th edition. We do it every 2 years, so we're looking at 17 years ago we started the Old Farmer's Almanac for Kids. So we're very busy here. We enlarge the size of the Garden Guide, which is an annual publication, comes out in early February, and that's a full color magazine that all kinds of tricks and tips for gardeners of all ages and experience levels. So we've introduced, the moon calendar in recent years, and continue with the country calendar, the Weather Watchers calendar. We ceased the recipe calendar and went with the website. And we continue with the most popular calendar of all, the gardening calendar. So some things change and some things don't.
The 2019 edition, the paper edition, will be available in stores. When does the availability start?
Well, officially, it's this week, just about anywhere. It takes several days, almost a week, I believe, to print nearly 3 million copies of the Old Farmer's Almanac. So that's done over the July 4th weekend. And then all of those pages have to be bound, glued, and stuck together. And then the hole gets punched into them, I think about a dozen copies at a time. You can imagine a drill going through 12 copies, and you've got 2.5 million sitting there. There's about 500,000 that don't get drilled because they're a hardcover or something like a hardcover. And then the copies of the Old Farmer's Almanac get bundled in specific displays with a specific count per display, put into trucks that are going in all different directions across the country, and then delivered to stores where they're put out. So that's a lot of time and a lot of travel in about 6 weeks' time. So they should be in stores wherever you buy things. If you can't find an Old Farmer's Almanac near you or want to save yourself time looking, go to the website almanac.com/where-to-buy, and you can find every store in your immediate vicinity that is based on your zip code that carries the Old Farmer's Almanac, as well as our other publications.
Now, 3 million copies made every year. Is it a sellout every year?
It's pretty close. It's been very popular. We've been printing 3 million as long as I've been here and then some. And we distribute about 500,000 to Canada with a special Canadian edition, Canadian weather and astronomical information and a variety of other Canadian relevant, if you will, kind of content. But 3 million, yeah, for at least 18 years.
The paper edition is $6.99. When these are sold, where do the funds go for the Old Farmer's Almanac?
These days they go to pay for paper. Paper has become extremely expensive. You might have heard that there's been a tariff imposed on the paper. It goes to pay the salaries of the printer and his people who work on the book, the ink that it takes to put the book together, the distribution people and they get paid, and the trucks get filled with gas with some of that money. And it's also used to pay the staff here at the Old Farmer's Almanac in Dublin, New Hampshire. So it sounds like a lot, but we don't get $6.99 for each copy. We split that with stores in various percentages, and then after expenses are paid, we hope to make money on the product. I mean, that we're a business, so but there's a lot of people who have to be taken care of before that's said and done.
Absolutely. You are the first female editor of the Old Farmer's Almanac. What do you think, as a woman, you have brought to this different than the editors of past years?
Boy, that's a tough one, because except for the fellow who failed to run the weather forecasts, I think I've done a job that's similar to all the folks who preceded me. One fellow, as I say, he neglected to run the weather forecast and sales plummeted. So we learned that lesson early on. I think I have a sort of punny, P-U-N-N-Y, sense of humor, and some of that appears on the page. But it's a natural curiosity is really what's needed for this job, to kind of be open to ideas and understand the mission to be useful with a pleasant degree of humor, and recognize also that the Old Farmer's Almanac is about nature and the rhythm and cycles of the year and nature, and really kind of hone to that a little bit, but still be open to some of the classic topics such as home remedies or quirky humor, and just be able to recognize that kind of content. So it's not so much about me as just what a terrific formula the founder, Robert B. Thomas, put together back in 1792.
Why do you think this has sustained since 1792?
Well, I think it's because whoever is the editor and whoever are the contributors really are doing the same job for 227 years, which is to say, trying to provide interesting insights, time-saving and money-saving tips and advice, a bit of humor. It's truly a classic and reliable bit of information about astronomy, from the day lengths to the sunrise and sunset, the moon phases, and numerous other aspects of the calendar pages. So it's really the reliability, the trust that people put in the Old Farmer's Almanac simply cannot be measured. It is the basis of the success of the book for 227 years. The trust that people will find information that is accurate and reliable, useful, but also find something amusing, something entertaining, and make them smile. And in fact, that's what the publication has done for years. Is you mention it to somebody, they see the cover, whatever, they thumb the pages, and it invariably brings a smile to people's faces and lightens their spirit almost immediately.
The founder, Robert B. Thomas, who was he?
Well, he was a fellow who grew up on a farm in central western Massachusetts. Everybody in the 1700s pretty much lived on farms, grew their own food, vegetables and fruits, and kept their own animals. There's a lot of bartering going on. People traded goods one for another. And Robert B. Thomas read the farmer's almanacs of his day. There were numerous farmer's almanacs. Their almanacs are as old as dirt, so to speak. They date back from the Egyptians and probably were not quite like Robert B. Thomas's in anything except perhaps the size. But he read those of his day, but he apparently found them to be not reliable. Perhaps the information was inadequate, occasionally inaccurate, and he fell in love with astronomy. His father was a teacher and happened to have a copy of a book called Ferguson's Astronomy, And Robert B. Thomas would take that and go out on the lawn, out in the fields after doing his chores when the night had set in, and he'd look up at the moon, look for the constellations, watch the meteor showers, look for the conjunctions, and developed a true enthusiasm for and knowledge of astronomy. So he was a teacher in his early 20s just to kind of get by, and he decided that he really wanted to start an almanac. He was a bookbinder for a while, so we knew a lot about the trade and the practical aspects of publishing. So he went to study with a fellow, I believe his name was Osgood, in Boston, who was an what they called an almanac maker. I'm not sure that Osgood actually produced his own almanacs, but he may have been calculating others. But anyway, Robert B. Thomas worked with him in 1792 to do all the astronomical calculations for 1793. And he produced, in the end, a first almanac. I want to say it was a pamphlet rather than a book because it was only 46 pages and substantially smaller in size, page-wise, than the current Old Farmer's Almanac. But he printed 3,000 copies. It became a sellout, and essentially he never looked back. I mean, Robert B. Thomas's book was dependable and reliable for folks, and they found that his recipe, for example, for a new and improved way to make butter, his advice and home remedies for curing a toothache or removing freckles, for example, was helpful. People those days grew hemp, and he liked people apparently liked the story he had in that. But more importantly, it was also a book laden with all kinds of charts and tables, the likes of which we continue today. But back then, remember, they had dirt roads, and people rode around on horseback and in wagons. There were no maps, per se. Nobody knew, really, how far one place was from another. And this is the New England distribution for the most part. So Robert B. Thomas devoted several pages in his almanac to the distance between places, which is to say how many miles from one town to the next in several states in New England. Because people, when they set out, needed to know, is this an overnight trip, or am I going to through several towns and need to allow more time than I might have planned. He also put in an interest table. Oddly enough, the interest at that time was 6%, because people had to, maybe they bartered, sure, but they had to pay staff, they had to pay for certain goods, or maybe they were borrowing or lending money and they needed to know just exactly how much to calculate. So it was, in effect, a calculator in itself. Mm. He also had information that was useful to folks whose children went to college. Back then, the universities, pretty much the only ones, I think, were Harvard in Boston, Cambridge, Massachusetts specifically, and Dartmouth College up in Hanover, New Hampshire here. And so Robert B. Thomas printed the vacation days of the colleges so that the students and the families would know when the students were free and could come back and work on the farm. Because, again, everybody lived on a farm and all hands were needed when it was seeding and harvesting time. So it was just the nature of the package, if you will, the combination of information and the collection and the attitude that he brought to the publication that made it a bestseller. And people continued to buy it year after year because, again, they found that the other farmers' almanacs simply didn't live up to the expectation.
Hmm. That's very interesting. Now, for somebody who will see this in the grocery store, the department store, if they don't know anything about the Farmer's Almanac, what would you tell them?
Well, I would tell them it's a time capsule of the year. So you will find information for every single day of the year. You'll find sunrise, sunset, when the moon phases, something quirky and practical in terms of in terms of a tidbit of information on the calendar pages, recipes, weather forecast certainly, best days to go fishing, planting by the moon, which is a traditional practice we can talk about later, trends to expect, interesting stories about animals and nature, for example, why you should have a dog in the house, a pet for your children. The inside story is that it keeps them from developing diseases and allergies. Advice for those folks who are thinking about developing a small farm, getting backyard livestock like cows and pigs, an introduction to secrets of the zodiac, which again are a part of traditional agriculture, a story about the day the sun exploded, because it's kind of interesting to note. Some people might be aware of the various solar explosions and the potential influence that could happen to our technology and has happened in the past to grid systems and like that. It's an anniversary story we have in this edition. Story about telling the bees and the folklore surrounding keeping bees, which is kind of fascinating too. Recipes like pickling, making sausage at home. You don't need to fill the intestinal tubes if you don't want to. You can make patties with the various recipes we provide. Delicious fresh meat and in some cases fruit included in the sausage recipes. So there's a variety of things. It's a book you can look at every year. These days, for example, we think of how the days are getting shorter. You can see exactly how much shorter they're getting by checking the old Farmer's Almanac. Not that I want to convey the bad news, but it's kind of something we all have to be aware of as we move through the year.
Absolutely. Now, as we head into the winter, here in the Midwest, just 45 minutes north of Columbus, what does the winter of 2019 look like?
Well, we're predicting warmer and rainier than normal conditions, actually. And that's below near normal snowfall. So we're looking at above normal temperatures, although there certainly will be some freezing temperatures. But December will be one of the coldest months, in fact, for the entire winter. We're seeing snowfall over Christmas in all likelihood and possibly right up through the end of the year. We're seeing snow a couple of times the beginning and end of January. And we're seeing the season wind up with snow in late March and early April. So we're kind of calling it a shorts and shovel, boots and barbecue winter with a grand finale of two snowstorms, possibly right after spring officially starts.
Wow, so we're looking at snow into April of 2019.
Yeah, very possibly the very first week, yeah.
Wow. So a long winter.
Well, it'll be cold to start, especially in November. It'll start to get kind of cool. You might even see snow showers the first week of November. But December will be the coldest month, and then it'll be relatively mild in January, near freezing or slightly above freezing in February on average for the month. But sure, March, it really won't be a cold month, but you know it doesn't take but a little bit of a chill in the air to turn rain into snow sometimes. So we are predicting a wind-up of snow at end of March and early April, yes.
You know, it's interesting. December of 2016, I don't think anybody in Ohio will ever forget, on Christmas Eve, it was 70 degrees in 2016. I mean, that is something I think we all remember. Last year, it was, you know, I don't think we had, I think we had a little bit of snow on Christmas Eve. But so this year, it looks like it might be a white Christmas.
That's what we're predicting, right, snow showers. There may not be a lot of snow on the ground, but if you have snow in the air, flakes are falling, it is a white Christmas. So I think that's what we can expect.
Now, how do these weather forecasts come about?
Well, we use a meteorologist named Michael Steinberg, who's a professional long-range forecaster, which is to say he dedicates his life to that and has really forever. We use three scientific disciplines, solar science, which is the study of the activity on the sun, in particular the sunspots, and these are explosions on the surface of the sun, and they occur in cycles of 11 years on average. So rather like the stock market, you can go up and the cycle goes up and the cycle goes down. We're currently in a down phase of the cycle, and one of the quietest cycles, the lowest high, if you will, in more than 100 years. So solar science, climatology, which is look back through time, and in this case, we look at the activity on the sun over decades and centuries and compare it to today, see what the weather was decades and centuries ago, and make a calculated forecast about what it could be this year, and then use meteorology to consider, for example, the ocean temperatures, the land temperatures, the jet stream, oscillations such as that in the Arctic and over the Pacific and Atlantic Oceans, and other things that factor into any global forecast and make our predictions for the U.S. and Canada.
What has the accuracy been over the years with the weather reports?
Well, traditionally our weather forecasts are 80% accurate. This past winter, last winter, we were 83% accurate in forecasting the direction of temperature change and 72% accurate in forecasting the direction of change in precipitation. So we were about 77% accurate overall across the country for the winter last year, which is pretty close to our traditional 80% accuracy rate. Certainly, there will be places that we were not as accurate in temperature or precipitation, or maybe more so in various parts of the country during a week, a month, or a season. But we look at the big picture, the national picture, and that's what we came out with. So Michael Steinberg has been doing a pretty terrific job since 1995.
Mm. You talked about the moon and the planting. Now explain that for us.
The moon and planting, you say, yes?
Yes.
Right. Well, there's a traditional gardening habit that subscribes to the idea that the phase of the moon influences the moisture in the soil. So that when you plant above ground or below ground meaning a transplant or below ground meaning a seed, that the amount of moisture in the soil, rather like the moon affects the tides as advancing or being low, for example, during storm times in particular. The belief is that when you plant in the proper moon phase, then you have greater success. And we have a table for doing that exactly with all the dates through all the growing season with the particular plants in every edition of the Old Farmer's Almanac and on our website, almanac.com. In fact, you can go to the website and key in your zip code, and you can see exactly what your best planting days are based on the moon phase. So it's a practice that some people believe makes all the difference in the world in their plants. I mean, it's a propitious day. It doesn't mean you won't have success if you don't plant on those days. But it's an age-old practice, and you know, numerous readers across the country for all the years I've been here and then some put total faith in this habit. So it's mostly vegetables. We do identify the flowering plants and some grain crops, but it's mostly vegetables, of course.
Now, what kind of mail do you get from readers?
Oh, all kinds of questions. You know, I had mail and email and phone calls. I had a call from somebody yesterday in Sacramento, California, and he asked why on the cover we had gone from Roman numerals to identify the volume number to, I don't know what you call them, regular numbers, I guess. So where we used to have the, I don't even have one in front of me now, but the Roman numerals up at the top in the center, it now says number 227. And I explained to them that in 2017, the anniversary of the 225th edition, we redrew the cover, which means that we had an artist essentially copy it, but clean it up. If you have a back issue prior to 2017, anybody out there can notice that it was a bit kind of, I don't want to say cartoonish, but it was a little bit more casual drawing. And if you notice the 2017, 18, and now 19, you'll see a much crisper definition in all of the scroll work, in all of the seasonal illustrations, in all of the corn and wheat shafts on the edges around the frame, and certainly in the pictures of Benjamin Franklin and Robert B. Thomas. So when we did that, we actually introduced more color, by the way, too. It's a more vivid and colorful cover. When we did that, we also purchased a font. We had a font made in particular for the Old Farmer's Almanac for the cover as well as the inside pages. And it was at that time we just thought, you know, for simplicity's sake, after all, Roman numerals aren't used that much anymore. You used to see them on wristwatches and, in fact, a number of clocks and other places as well. But we just thought, let's make it simple, let's make it easy, and we went with the numbers 227. So that's one kind of inquiry we get. We get a lot of questions from people about their garden, specific plants, the success or failure of them, what to do, what the problem is. And oftentimes, I must say, it's the soil. I think that's probably the solution to 75% to 80% of the questions we get via mail or email, is that if you have a problem with your garden, it's probably the soil. Usually the response is a soil test. And as lots of folks know, I'm sure that the cooperative extensions in your vicinity and around the country do an excellent soil test where you get a solution to the quality of your soil and information on what you need to add or however else you need to amend your soil. But I would just like to point out in the 2019 edition, we have the underwear soil test. So if you don't want to make the investment in a cooperative extension detailed soil test, you could try this. Dig a hole 6 to 8 inches deep in your garden or field bed. Bury a pair of clean 100% cotton, white or undyed men's underwear. There may be a waistband on it. It's made of elastic. Don't worry about it. Leave the underwear in the soil for 2 months and then remove them from the soil. And the amount of remaining cotton fabric indicates roughly the amount of earthworms, fungi, bacteria, and other microscopic organisms in the soil, or basically its organic quality. If only the waistband remains, the organic quality is very high. If most of the drawers remain, the soil is lacking in biological life because it has been overused and probably needs a lot of organic amendment, compost, aged manure, and the like. So that's the long way to answer your question about what kind of queries we get from readers across the country.
Could it be any cotton garment, or does it have to be underwear?
Well, you might be able to. You might do a T-shirt. I mean, you could probably play with this a little bit and maybe try a few things over a space of, garden space. But the way it was presented and identified by the Soil Conservation Council of Canada, it should be men's underwear. It may be the thickness of the knit or something. And the pure cotton nature of it might be more useful, for example, than, say, a cotton blouse or something. And I would just say, try it and let us know how it works out, because now that you mention it, I'm curious.
That's interesting. We know why Robert B. Thomas is on the cover. He came up with it. Why is Ben Franklin on the cover?
Well, Benjamin Franklin is the father of almanacs, and he founded Poor Richard's Almanac. So that's why we honor him on the cover on the left, on the left-hand side of the big red digits that designate the year. He and Robert B. Thomas were not contemporaries. They did not work together. I think Robert B. Thomas probably read copies of Poor Richard's Almanac that you may have found laying around hither and yon. But he adopted a lot of his appreciation for proverbs and adages we know throughout his long leadership of the Farmer's Almanac. So Benjamin Franklin is there as an American patriot and founder of the concept of Farmer's Almanacs in the U.S.
Now, as far as the input in the almanac besides the weather, which we've learned where that comes from, how do you decide what to put in and what not to put in?
Well, to a certain extent, that's my call as the editor. After 18 years, I think I have a certain instinct about what will work, but I also occasionally run stories by the publisher or by the other editors here, and we talk about how to reposition a story or how to slant it or, in fact, frankly, whether or not to go forward. And we don't do personal stories. We don't do first-person experience stories. And there's nothing wrong with them, but they just really don't fit into the mission to be useful with a pleasant degree of humor, even though I know some folks' stories are kind of humorous. But it's not about anybody. It's about the readers and in a way that the story can be useful or informative to them. And also the consideration that the Old Farmer's Almanac is a reference book, first and foremost. In fact, that's where you find it in libraries and bookstores as well, in addition to newsstands. As a reference, it's a guide. It's a little change of pace from the headlines, of course, just by the nature of the content. We don't do contemporary news. But it's stories that are informative, entertaining, obscure, but not so esoteric that they really would be of interest to folks in a highly local region, for example, that's probably better suited to a local newspaper or a state magazine, for example. So it's kind of an assessment of what is the benefit, how does the reader, what is the reader going to gain, how do they benefit from reading this, how does it fit into our collection of stories. And the topics are all clearly identified in the table of contents, of course. And the topics switch from season from year to year with each edition. But typically, it's food and gardening, weather stories, home remedies, occasionally romantic stories, folklore stories, history. If it's an anniversary year, in particular, again, if something that has relevance to people just about anywhere in the country as opposed to a local environment. Pets and husbandry, nature, which involves just about any aspect of plant and animal life. So it's kind of, again, it goes back to what is the takeaway? What is the benefit to the reader? How does this have lasting shelf value, whether it's for the current year of the publication or 5 or 50 years going forward? If somebody picks up this copy of the Old Farmer's Almanac years forward from now, what will they think about what was in it? What will they think about the people who are reading it? What will they think about the times we lived in at that time? In the same way that we have all 226 other editions of the Almanac here in our Dublin offices, and we go back and look at them from time to time for a number of reasons, we can kind of get a big picture profile of life in those times and interests of people in those times. So that's kind of a detailed description of how and why I choose the stories, or we choose the stories most often, of course, here.
Now, as far as the home remedies section, I know a lot of people love this section. Have these been tested and proven?
Oh, sure. As it happens, I'm not seeing right away any that we have specific home remedies as a category here in this edition. I'm kind of looking around here real quick. All of these are tested. Everything in the Old Farmer's Almanac is fact-checked. The recipes are all tested, by the way, too, tested and tasted. So we don't do things casually and spontaneously in terms of off-the-cuff and unchecked. And this, again, goes back to the trust that people put in the publication. You're not going to find something so questionable, shall we say, unbelievable, unreliable. So it's all highly checked and checked and tried and timeless and true. I mean, it's really, it's just not something, I can't even find the words because it's simply not something we do.
I understand. The astrology and the astronomy, this has remained popular. What is behind that for somebody who has no idea what that means? It used to be very popular in newspapers. I don't think as popular as it once was.
Astrology or astronomy? Astronomy, as you know, is hugely popular these days. People love to look up into the sky and see the Perseid meteor show, or any meteor showers. I'm thinking Perseid was this month. The full moon, the constellations, the various events, and of course there's so many websites about outer space and the travel that is taking place now. For example, I believe it's the Parker Explorer type of satellite that's going up to the sun. It was launched only a week or so, 10 days ago maybe. But there's a tremendous interest in outer space and the world around our planet here. So that's astronomy. That's the true exploration of outer space and stars and the sun. And we've got a lot of information on that in the Old Farmer's Almanac from eclipses and bright stars. For example, if you're an amateur astronomer or belong to an astronomy club or even planetariums out there, we're told that they love the Old Farmer's Almanac because it's so easy to understand and is so accurate and reliable in terms of where to look in the sky and at what time. And this information you can find in the calendar pages and the astronomy pages. Astrology is different insofar as it's a more traditional practice that is relates to the zodiac. You know, when somebody says, what's your birthday, what's your sign, that's astrology. And some people don't subscribe to it, but a lot of people do, and they believe that it has to do with the timing of things. Astronomy, if, for example, if you see the moon's place in the calendar pages, then it's the moon's place in the true constellations in the sky. Astrology does not match that, and we get a lot of questions about this. Why is the moon's place not the same as in astrology as it is in astronomy? Well, they're just different because astrology uses an older, if you will, zodiac configuration that doesn't match the actuality of the true astronomy constellation. Placement of the moon. So it's a traditional practice. We do have a story, actually, in the 2019 edition explaining some of this better than I can, frankly, in a nutshell. But essentially, one is true science and the other is a traditional practice.
Now, we talked about the winter of 2019. We're just wrapping up the summer of 2018. What does the summer of 2019 look like?
Oh, my. Well, isn't expected to be quite like this one. It will be cooler than normal and drier than normal next summer. So below normal rainfall and below normal temperatures. There will be hot spells. We're expecting an early start to the summer, and late May will be hot and late June and mid-August. But overall, the impression is, and the one that you'll come away with, is it's slightly cooler than normal. In fact, I'm looking for your region that summer temperatures will be on average in the high 60s, which is, let's face it, that's not terribly warm at all. Hard to describe it as hot. There'll be a few very hot periods, but overall, the impression is below 70-degree summer temperatures on average.
You know, it's interesting because the last few summers have not been particularly like I think most of us remember them when we were younger. Does the Farmer's Almanac or the meteorologist there have a position on, is this global warming? Is this a permanent change, or is it just of the time now?
Well, the climate is always changing, so keep that in mind. But certainly, yes, we do have higher greenhouse gases and carbon dioxide in the air than ever before. We're seeing a meltdown in the Arctic. That hasn't happened in anybody's lifetime or longer. There are things going on that we certainly believe and pay attention to and take into consideration in making our forecasts. So, yes, it really... All weather is local, and people look out the window and think about, you know, what's going on right over their heads. But, you know, it's really a global implications for all kinds of weather events. You know, it's funny here, too. In August, recent weeks, we've had a series of really pounding rainfalls here, several inches above normal rainfall in August. And at a talk I gave this past weekend, several people asked the same question in several different groups. And they said, you predicted a drier than normal weather for summer for us here in the Dublin, New Hampshire area. And I said, well, that's the thing. We predicted a drier than normal summer for the Region 1, which embraces the area from Albany, New York, to the top of Maine. But I said, here in local Dublin area, we did get extremely heavy rainfall, well above normal. I said, so that's just the way the world works right now. Sometimes some areas will see heavy rains and more than it was ever expected, and some people will see below normal rains less than any more than anything was expected. So it really kind of, I don't want to say it's hard to predict, but we predict on a regional basis. So there may be some spots like heat islands. I'm sure people have heard about this, like in the greater urban areas where the pavement and the brick and stone buildings hold the heat. It may be warmer, for example, than it is out in the suburbs or the rural areas. So somebody might observe that, well, it's really hot downtown, but it's not out here. So there are those kinds of differences to consider. But it's the world we live in, and there are extreme conditions such as the rain we had here that can develop instantly almost anywhere, really.
Spring and fall, because we see all four seasons here in Ohio, do they pretty well stay the same, that it's hot and cold and they change at about the same time? Are there variations in fall and spring?
Well, I think that's best, again, told kind of in your local area, and a lot of people do track that. They kind of start to make notes about the shift in season. Now, as we said, that there could be snow after the official turn to spring in March 2019 and even more coming in April. So that's kind of a clue there that it's not terribly unusual. I mean, it does happen here in New England. Sometimes we have real dump snows in April as well. You can't measure any one season or cycle and say that's climate change, because the climate is always changing, but you watch over a period of time and see how things shift. We're not going to rename the season benchmarks here at the Old Farmer's Almanac, but certainly we do pay attention to the kinds of shifts that we see locally.
Who is the longest serving editor in the history of the Farmer's Almanac?
I think that would be the founder, Robert B. Thomas, who started in when he was in his mid-20s and died when he was reading Galleys at age 80. So I don't think anybody has put in more time on this publication than he has.
In his lifespan, obviously we know how it started, but by the time he was in his 80s, how had the almanac changed? Was there a big staff by that point?
Well, there's really no record of that because they didn't have a masthead or a list of the employees and staff that contributed to the publication. But if you, and we do look at them here, as I mentioned, you can see that there are more pages in the publication. It's a larger page format. So more pages mean more content, more articles, more amusement. The calendar pages, of course, became easier to read on a larger page. So clearly, over the years that he was the editor and produced the publication, as interest grew, so did the content. And in fact, that's what we've done here at this over the years through this publication. Some folks in your listenership might remember a yellow cover in a stapled format, as opposed to the binding now that's glued in the back there through several sections. I won't get into the production of the publication, but the staple book was a smaller format and fewer pages than the one that you find in 2019 in recent years. So as the publication grows, as the interest in it grows, so does the publication.
In your time as editor, it's been an interesting time because it has been the rise of the internet and things we all see. Local newspapers are disappearing, and certainly they are not the link they once were. Magazines are disappearing. Even the TV Guide has changed the way they do. It's now more of a magazine and not more of a listing book. Has the internet age changed the Farmer's Almanac any great way?
Well, certainly it's enabled us to reach more people more often and more easily. So, you know, we're not going to throw stones at the internet and the website and the social media because they really benefit all of the readers and enthusiasts of all of the subject matter as well as the almanac itself. So we have 48 million unique annual visitors to almanac.com. We have a social media audience of 1.7 million, including on Facebook, where we have 1.5 million. As I mentioned, we continue to distribute 3 million copies of the Old Farmer's Almanac. So it's the paper goes hand in hand with the digital, and the digital allows us to provide much more specific information. But people really like the comfort and convenience of the print edition. I think some of your people might be aware that even e-books have found that, you know, the Kindle devices and like that are convenient, but a lot of people really just like to turn the page. So whether it's the Old Farmer's Almanac on paper or your favorite novel, mystery, whatever it might be, people like to turn the page. They like to hold something and relax with it and actually almost measure their way through it, make notes on the page, for example, refer to it easily, not have to turn something on or be within a Wi-Fi zone to get the information they want. So there's a benefit to all of the technology and all of the media channels and opportunities that are out there. So, you know, that's our goal, is to use it to best advantage, and so far people have found that to be very helpful.
Why do you think this has become the manual? Because certainly into the 20th century, it became the go-to. It still is the go-to. It's the one that persists. What do you think it was about this particular book?
Well, again, I think it's the mission to be useful with a pleasant degree of humor. We're not so serious through the pages. It's entertaining, it's practical, it's reliable, it's accurate, you can trust it. So it's really, and it's the package of information. As a calendar of the heavens, starting with the calendar pages and astronomy articles to support and explore and explain a lot of the astronomy numbers and things in the book, numbers and dates. And then from the calendar also springs the gardening season, so we support the idea of farming. And we have, for example, in this issue, a story of advice about getting backyard livestock. And then you've also got the weather that comes from the sky and defines the seasons. You've got home remedies and folklore that speak to traditions and practices of the yesteryear, but continue even today. And then we've got anniversary stories, because the Old Farmer's Almanac is a time capsule of the year, and we like to celebrate special anniversaries. In this case, for example, the duck stamp is the 85th year of the duck stamp, the only federally funded art award program in the country. Duck stamps are actually stamps, true stamps, that hunters buy for their license, and it's become an art contest, and you can see some of the artwork and get the story behind it in this edition. I've also got a story about the fellow who rode vehicles at high acceleration and then had them stopped. And high acceleration meaning, 632 miles per hour, only to be stopped in 5 seconds. John Stamp was his name, and he did this in the 1950s, and it ultimately led to seatbelts. So it's the anniversary of that event, and as the fastest man's last death-defying ride is the name of the story. We've got trends because it's a time capsule of the year. Things we'll be seeing, for example, that we've noticed as trends. And this is all deep research through one of our contributors who reaches out to people across the country. Exercising classes at grocery stores. Paternity leave for new pet parents. People who are getting pets will be able to take a leave to welcome them home. Toilets that flush on command. Flowers as food. We're seeing and hearing more about edible flowers in restaurants and in backyards, and we identify a couple dozen flowers that are safe and fun to eat. Pickling recipes. Again, it goes back to tradition, but we put a slightly different spin on it. Pickle some corn. It's corn harvest time, so try that this year. Also, beets when the season comes around for growing beets, and asparagus, you can pickle that too. And oh, by the way, because everybody makes them, we've got pickling recipes. So a salute to farmers across the country, the folks who grew our food. We started this in 2017, and we're introducing one-page profiles of farmers around the country, whether they grow nuts or vegetables, keep a farmer's market, grow animals, keep bees, and make honey. It's just wonderful stories, especially about younger people who are getting into the work, if you will, the occupation, the lifestyle of farming, and making a go of it, changing the way we eat and live and the lifestyle around for the community. As I mentioned, the sausage-making recipe, and there's even so much more. Great stories on the 1969 World Series victory of the New York Mets. Baseball's most amazing wins, recounted by sports analyst Charlie Pierce, who some people might know from NPR's Only a Game radio show. So there's just so much that makes this Old Farmer's Almanac distinctive. I dare people to go out, frankly, and pick up one of the other Farmer's Almanacs. Farmer's Almanacs are as old as dirt. We do have competition. They're out there. They have a different color cover, not yellow. They're sometimes not, or they're a pale yellow, or they're a shadow of what we are. You don't see Robert B. Thomas and Benjamin Franklin on the cover. Just take a second look. And I know it's confusing. People are short on time. They maybe, just pick up what looks like a farmer's almanac and they don't recognize the difference. I know it happens, and they're the ones who call us and say, you change this, you change that, it's not here, and we have to ask them, first thing is, do you have the yellow cover publication? And, you know, that makes me think to save people time and hassle and not pick up the wrong one. You can go to almanac.com/, add a slash mark, and then the words where to buy with no spaces. And you put in your zip code, and it'll tell you exactly all the stores in your area that sell the Old Farmer's Almanac, as well as our gardening guide and Old Farmer's Almanac for kids.
All very interesting. The editor of the 2019 Old Farmer's Almanac, Janice Stillman. Janice, thank you so much. It's always very interesting.
It's been delightful to talk to you and to share the story of the almanac with your listeners, Scott. Have a great day.
Take care. Bye-bye. The Old Farmer's Almanac on sale now. We'll be back in 10 minutes with trivia.
4495 webpage CRT.